Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, tennis fans from around the globe. The following program is a presentation of the Yellow Ball Network.
Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamics Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
Everybody, welcome back to another edition of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. We're here every Tuesday at noon, except when it doesn't work schedule-wise. And it's a beautiful thing about this internet radio, this live radio. You know, it's live radio, but it's on the internet, and you can schedule it just about any time. I'm looking, you know, recently, everybody I know has got a show. Everybody, there are so many shows on today. There's a new one. Wes Fuller's got one on with Susan Nardi, and then Coach Creasy's got one, Lisa Stone's show. They're on a different network. They're over there on the other network. I'm still looking for somebody that would be interested in coming over and joining the Yellow Ball Network, the network of freedom. All right, so we're here in Atlanta. It's rainy. Last year was a snowy year. This year it's a rainy winter. And not a lot of tennis going on today. Hopefully a little bit later it'll clear up. Maybe we'll get on the courts. The Yellow Ball Hotline number is 646-652-4856. And unless I post it otherwise, most of the time we're on Tuesdays at noon. And so we're gonna take a quick commercial break. I try to get the commercials, at least half of them, out of the way before we get into it. We got a special guest today, Coach Steve Smith. He's volunteer assistant now at NC State. He's at NC State. If you don't follow him on Facebook at Tennis Smith, you should. Great stuff. He's like the James Michener of tennis. So he writes something good every other day. So anyway. We will be right back. We'll take this commercial break, and when we come back, hopefully we'll have Steve Smith on with us.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Grand Prix. It's a lot of fun. You get to play a lot of tennis,
and we have Chick-fil-A sandwiches from Chick-fil-A.
And you get to eat a lot.
And if you can, you can play doubles with your friends or with your dad or your mom.
Hey folks, this is J.P. Weber. Take it from the kid. The 2015 Handmade Charlotte Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments is a great way to spend the day with the family playing tennis. To find out more, go to www.tennisdynamics.net. That's tennisdynamics.net, where you can call us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center at 770-919-8602. Hi, coaches and players. If you play on a tennis court in the Southeast, you've probably played on a tennis court designed, constructed, lighted, or resurfaced by courtmakers.com. Marshall Dye and the guys at Courtmakers will work on any type of court. From my experience with them, they work in a professional manner, they show up on time like they say they will, and they never leave a mess. Courtmakers can provide for all equipment needs. Call them at 770-795-8400. 770-795-8400. That's courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I take great pride in calling it the way it is. It's a meat and potato principle of coaching that no one really cares what you know unless they know that you care. As a parent also, I want this and very skilled hands working with my youngster. Coach J.P. Weber's 30 years of experience speaks for itself. Go see him at Laurel Park in Marietta, Georgia. His website is tennisdynamics.net. Tennisdynamics.net.
Where is the sun that shone on my head? The sun in my life, it is dead, it is dead. Where is the light that would play in my street? And where are the friends I could meet, I could meet?
All right, we're back. Let me jump real quick on the 78-foot soapbox for this week real fast. When I first took a job, when I first got into coaching, back into coaching, I went from Arizona, I went to Clemson. I was at Clemson, and, we played a lot of the schools around the South. And, I moved from Clemson to Furman, and then I got an opportunity to go to work at Notre Dame. And I thought to myself, what's it going to be like going to Notre Dame? I had been around schools where football was big. Clemson, the football is, it's Auburn. You drive around down to Auburn, you see the practice football field down in Auburn. It's like a golf putting green. And then they had elevators that went up to the top. You go to Alabama, you see this kind of stuff. Clemson, Auburn, one or two titles between them. So I'm getting ready to go to Notre Dame. I'm thinking, 10 national championships at that time. Wow, Lou Holtz is there. So it's going to be big time. I get up there, and I get to the school, before, let me say it a little bit better. At Clemson, they had mahogany lockers for every player. Same thing at Auburn, same thing at Alabama. Just gorgeous facilities. Anyway, I go up to Notre Dame and I take a tour around there. Coach Bayless takes me on a tour and he shows me at that time the freshman at Notre Dame shared a locker, and it was an old locker room, very sparse aluminum or steel metal lockers, open lockers, but they had enough only that they had to share. I went. Probably the thing that struck me the most was we went by the practice football field. Now, at that time, they had just put up the Loftus, but for the most part, they practiced outside. The fences around the football field were rusty and old. The practice football field itself was clumpy and lumpy. And yet, there at that school, small school, Midwest, 10 national titles. But a lot of times, I think what we see and what we think makes up a program isn't all that, sometimes it's a lot of extra stuff that's probably not needed. And I see this now more than ever, I believe, in tennis. I see a lot of these programs selling you on a lot of different value-added stuff, and yet I'm not so sure these are the things that really make a difference in a player. So be careful, parents, as you go out there and you're looking at different places and you're seeking to find it. It's not always the bright lights and the bells and whistles and everything that get the job done. Often it's the character of the athletes that are there, and it's the character of the coach and the leadership of the coach, and that's going to be the difference. All right, that's my 78-foot soapbox for today. We'd love for you to call in on the Yellow Ball Hotline. The number is 646-652-4856, and I am hopeful that I've got Coach Steve Smith on the line. Steve, are you there?
JP, I'm on the line. How are you today?
Great. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Well, I don't know if you were able to. Did you? Were you on in time to hear my 78-foot soapbox for this week?
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
I heard it.
Did it resonate? Let me ask you. I see today all of these programs that have, you know, I lose kids right and left. We try to do the nuts and bolts or the bread and butter of what needs to be done, but it's, you know, a lot of what I do isn't real sexy. It's not, you know, it's not the sexiest program in the world. And we lose a lot of, you know, we lose kids to some of this fancy stuff. In your travels and what you've done, what works? What is it that really matters out there?
Well, Hungry Dog Hunts Best. I've had the chance to travel, and that's one of the luxuries of being a tennis teacher. I've taught tennis in over 30 countries, and you're spot on with all the bells and whistles. You know, tennis players, it's amazing. I was just talking to an old coach my age about Monica Seles. In the first 4 years of her life, she could just hit against the backboard. So, no, for sure. Bigger and better sometimes is confusing.
But do we need? Am I stuck at a time where I probably should be getting and moving up with the times? I mean, everybody's got a, you know, they got an academy, they got a mental person. There's an academy, there's probably numerous, but they got everything there. They've got, I mean, I can't imagine how they could fail. They've got a mental person, they've got a specialist in movement, they've got. And yet when I watch the kids play, I don't see the production in the ball. You know, I'll tell you one thing. Do you remember Don Dickinson?
Mm-hmm.
Don used to talk about, he liked Sampras a lot. He didn't like a lot of hollering and yelling on the court. Don was kind of a quiet guy himself, I think. And Don would talk about, you know, he wanted to see the production on the ball. So you'd see these guys grunting and then loud and no production on the ball. I mean, you see all these programs and you see all the extra stuff that goes along with it. You know, am I missing that? Has it changed so that we do need to have the footwork specialist, the mental specialist, working with our 8s, 9s, and 10 years olds? Or is that what they need?
Well, I think the times have changed. We developed an incredible amount of great players back in the day where you just, you know, one hour less than a week. I think the tennis players are programmed out. I always ask, you know, what happened to calling a friend up and using a basketball and you feed me some balls, I'll feed you some balls, or serving on your own, or hitting against the backboard, a strong-willed individual hitting against the backboard for hours and hours. You know, people calling up to play matches. So, I think in some ways, tennis has become too structured, too organized. And, you know, I think the spirit of the individual, here's a backboard, here's a basket of balls, here's a skip rope. I don't think you have to pay someone $50 an hour to watch you throw a medicine ball against a wall. So Jack Cramer was asked years ago by the French Tennis Federation, and this is before they had a breakthrough, and had the success that they've had. His question was, we spend more money on tennis than any other federation. What's our problem? And Jack Cramer said, the answer to your question is the answer. You're spending too much money. So I think in that sense, for sure, bare bones. You know, if you just study the history of tennis players, I think it was great back in the day, you know, where Charlie Hollis, who coached Labor, you would have to skip the rope 1,000 times per day. Parents would check that. And if you did that, you'd get your weekly lesson. So that empowerment, that entitlement, I don't think that children realize how much money is being spent on their game. And it's overspending for the most part. The fat cat doesn't become a great player.
So, you know, we when you mention the money part of it, and this is just an aside on that. When I work with parents and things, I try to tell them, and that's omnipresent in a lot of parents' minds, and they'll really throw it in the kid's face. You know, you don't know how much money. I actually tell them not to get into that. They're going to spend money on their kids no matter what. And you're right. Don't get me wrong. You're right. They don't understand the value of it. But that's an added pressure, isn't it, that we add? You know, it's a tough thing to talk about with kids. We're either going to spend money on them or we aren't. And it's so screwed up now that here goes all the money into what we're doing. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, the onus isn't on them per se. Does that make sense? I think when you talk about the fact that it's so structured, the onus in turn isn't, you know, does that make sense? And we lament, parents will lament the fact that they won't take responsibility for themselves. Am I making sense with this, where I'm heading with this?
I understand where you're coming from. I think when it comes down to tennis teachers, coaches, whatever the title may be, I think they take too much of a subservient role. It's almost like they're always providing service for the player. It's great to, have people go out, practice, solo practice, do a number of different exercises, routines, drills on your own. And then, invent the expression invent some. Will you go the extra mile? I think many times what happens is players are they're brought to practice by their parents. Practice starts at 2, it ends at 4, and there's nothing before and nothing after. I think, rightfully so, parents have a tendency to overprotect their children today. Just with 900 TV outlets, it's obviously scary with what goes on in everyday life. But I think because of that, children don't have the independence that they did years ago. Now, it's amazing to me, all these years later, I've been teaching tennis 40 years, how many parents watch practice. Now, I welcome parents to watch practice, but when they watch every day, that's just over the top.
Don't have anything else to do. Okay, on this line, on Facebook, if people go to Tennis Smith on Facebook, that's your page. You promote the Great Base Initiative, the backboard, everything on there. But you wrote a great piece, must have been a week or so ago, about talk a little bit about that. You were talking about it's almost anti-customer service in the sense that the your students are not your clients. Can you elaborate? Because I think that's going right down.
Well, I just did flip-flop. I think people misinterpreted my point. One of my mentors, Vic Braden, used to say we would leave a conference and he'd say, you would say there's 50 people in the room. I shared 50 points and they're misinterpreted 50 different ways. Do the math. But, many times what happens with a coach, if they're working with someone who's selfish or not motivated, don't have the work ethic, the expression, you're telling the right things to the wrong people. Well, I just turned it around and said, you can't say the wrong things to the right people. In other words, to be politically incorrect. And if a player needs to be told, that they're making mistakes left and right and they need to be read the Riot Act, it's like a movie that was out recently, Whiplash. One thought from the movie is, don't just tell someone good job. Pretty good means pretty bad. But I think we sugarcoat it, and diplomacy might be the greatest thing for world peace, but from a player development standpoint, diplomacy kills time. I mean, if you're killing people with kindness, a 12-year-old should not be looked as your client. They should be your student. And it shouldn't be a matter, I'm going to make them happy so they come back, and the only business is repeat business. I think that's unfortunate. Unfortunately, too much part of the tennis culture in America.
Now, how do you handle that? I mean, it's funny. This is a problem that a coach has every day. I recently sort of was lamenting a very similar situation to Coach Creasy. As a matter of fact, he was up in Lawrenceville working for a gentleman up there that just moved to Florida. I can't think of the guy's name. But anyway, he had run off a couple of the – he was subbing for the guy while he was out, and he had run off a couple of the kids. And he said, I can't treat them like clients, right along what you say. But he also said this. He said, there's some people you can give 100% to. And there's some people, you know, 100% of your coaching, and there's some people you're just never going to be able to give them 100%. Is that part of, I think it was Ashley Hobson, as a matter of fact. He was subbing for Ashley Hobson, but up there, I think Ashley had a couple of kids that didn't take too well to his discipline or the way he wanted them to do things, so off they went.
Well, in the end, I mean, does a tennis player just want a little bit of help? And if they just want a little bit of help, perhaps they just want to get a little bit better. So, you know, when it comes down to pushing, I always tell parents, I said, you know, don't shove, but you should push. You know, it might be conscientious neglect, but, you know, you need to monitor, you know, one's investment of time, one's work ethic. But when you turn the volume up, you know, I think a lot of times the player in tennis, I don't think that's true from sports like football and basketball. When you turn up the volume, unfortunately, too many times kids are feelers and not thinkers, and they'll hear your tone. But, you know, the coach really, when they're turning up the volume, they're just really showing you that they care and they're passionate about you getting better. But that's where the helicopter parent often comes to the rescue. And, you know, every day is not a golden day, and to push people to greater heights, you know, that's why I always have young players fill out a goal sheet. You know, if they say, okay, I want to play college tennis, you know, then I'll tell them, you know, less than 3% of high school players play college tennis, and less than 85% of players, it just hovers right around that mark. If they don't play as a freshman, they don't play as a sophomore. And it's not really scare tactics. It's, you know, you've set your goals very high and you can get there, but you can't get there on cruise control.
How early you're up at, okay, you're in at NC State right now, and you're a volunteer assistant, is that right, with the team? And then you're also doing your school. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing up there.
Well, last semester I worked as a volunteer assistant. I spent years with Matt Clore, who's the assistant coach. I've known John Choboy, who's the head coach, for a long time. But this semester, Matt's brother Chris is with us, and he's serving as a volunteer. And I'm just working as a consulting director for tennis camps and programs. They have a junior development program that, you know, I've revitalized or adjusted. I'm not sure what the right word would be, but you know, now we have homeschoolers twice a day. We have you know, players that are coming in for mini camps or small groups coming in with their coaches. So we have a variety of camps we're running this year.
And you're doing that out of the tennis center there in Raleigh. Is that where you?
Yeah, I do that up this year. I'm on the NC State campus, and with, you know, I spent a great deal of time with the Great Base. It's a project that's not quite 2 years old, but no, I've you know, I enjoyed being here. There's a lot of nice things about Raleigh, North Carolina.
Talk a little bit about the Great Base initiative.
Well, actually, Richard Hernandez, who I trained to teach tennis 30 years ago, tennis pro in Toronto, is from Trinidad. And we're talking about, you know, in Canada, it's a progressive approach here. It was Quick Start, and now it's a 10 and under initiative. And just in conversation, Richard said, what we need is a Great Base initiative. And, you know, that just, the light bulb went off. And what I've done is I've studied numerous methodologies and worked under numerous tennis masters, and you know, we give credit where credit's due, but the bottom of the triangle, the entry level and beginning players and beginning teachers, you know, enter the game of tennis, it's just too much of a trial and error approach. It's based on guesswork. With, I think what happens many times is the young player from the early childhood development classes, they don't really get an experienced instructor. And our sport is very, very difficult. And I think that you know, there's a lot to be said with the USTA, their theme, play to learn, game-based training. And I understand that. There's a lot of positives to it. But I think you need to honor both. You still need to learn how to play. You still need to teach kids grips and shapes of the swing and body position. And, you know, that's what the Great Base is about. I think it is a program in this country that should be around the world, but it should be adopted by the USTA, and it should become part of the 10 and under initiative. You know, when it was called Quick Start, I countered by saying it should be the Right Start. And, you know, I think there's a lot of positives, the transition balls, and the graduating length method has been around for a long time. You know, shortening the size of the stroke, the size of the racket, the size of the court. But I think the 10 and under initiative in many ways is an insult to old coaches. These old coaches forever had people playing mini tennis. It's okay, we're playing mini tennis with a regular ball. And rule number one, we're playing service line to service line. Rule number two is you can't hit the ball hard. With a Great Base, I think if we were creative, and I share this with some of the leaders with the USTA, if we had form tournaments, if we had posters that had pictures of, you know, Roger Federer, for example, Djokovic, it could be a few years ago, Hingis and Justine Henin, if we took pictures of the players with a unit turn or the racket up high, the contact point. Today on Facebook, we put three photos up of Federer, backswing contact and follow through. And with that, we had a 40-second clip of an elementary student teaching other elementary students. But to have a form tournament, to do that at the beginning of a clinic, at the end of the clinic for 5 minutes, and that's where the prizes go. Because all you have to do is go out to a junior tournament. It's getting close to 3 years ago now. But a group of us at the National 12s, we filmed 50 boys and 50 girls incognito, and over 90% of the players had some version of palm up on the serve, pizza position on the serve. You know, the commercial, and there are a lot of great people with the USTA and, you know, a lot of great causes, but the girl on TV, the cute little girl, tosses the ball up and it comes down and hits her on the head. Yeah, it's got to be fun, but at the same time, We as parents, we wouldn't want to put our kid in a reading class if they're not going to read the alphabet, or learn the alphabet. And then, you know, just prevention of injury for a lifetime sport is to, you know, teach people properly when they enter the game. So that's a little bit about the Great Base.
You know, it's funny you mention that. I have I've thought about this often. I've shared with you before in the past that you know, so many of the things that you put up, I will have that, I will intuit it to myself, and then you'll put it up on your Tennis Smith on Facebook thing, and I'm like, he's articulated finally. Well, I'd love for you to be kind of, I don't know if you remember who George Sheehan was. George Sheehan was for running, you know, he sort of talked about the essence of running and the philosophy of running and why we run and why we are in shape. And you're kind of that way to tennis for me. They don't take, they you know, it's funny. They want it so fun, but they won't take what you do as seriously. I think you're right. I think you're exactly right. It is needed. I had an assistant that I was real lucky to get when I first came here. And we spent all the time working. We didn't care so much the end result with some of these young kids playing wise. We focused on the form. We focused on he made it fun, you know, to hit the ball a certain way and have, you know, the kind of finish or the contact, whatever we were looking at. He made that the fun thing. And a lot of people can't do that. I think that that's probably what a good portion of I think that's what a lot of what the Quick Start initiative came out of and was for. It was to actually sort of be a crutch or a handicap. This is the way I look at it. You know, I'm sure people are insulted by this, but it was a crutch or a handicap for coaches that couldn't take and do what you're talking about, take the fundamentals and make it fun. But then they'll come back to you. They'll criticize you, Steve. They'll say, look, I mean, it's boring what Steve Smith does. It's boring and it's not fun and it's not going to sell to the masses. What do you say as an answer to that?
Well, Peter Berwash has been spoiled by working with so many different tennis teachers. Peter Berwash, you know, comes down to the personality of the instructor. And I do think the instructor, the coach, you know, they set the tone, they create the mood, the atmosphere, and it can change on the snap of a finger or the blow of a whistle, where, okay, we're going to go to work now. But really, having the longer rally, getting to the point where you can play doubles and go to the net. You know, are we looking for hit and giggle fun? But even with hit and giggle fun, and I can understand where recreational tennis, it can be geared in a different way, but the substance, the curriculum still needs to be rock solid. I think it's a total disservice not to teach young kids proper grips and proper body position. So when someone says they want to play competitive tennis, I think it's a cop out when parents who perhaps are new to the sport and they bring their child to a tennis for tykes and parents alike, a tennis for tots class, that, you know, there's no waiver that says, well, in this class you really won't learn how to play. And granted, it's not swimming. In swimming, we realize it's a life-saving skill. But it doesn't have to be 100% a playground mentality. You know, it's very unusual at a tennis club in the U.S. or around the world where there's a video room. There's a chalkboard. You know, people, kids actually sit in a chair and listen. So I think it becomes too much the entertainment business and not the educational side. So, but I, you know, you can make it fun. I think, you know, I get that all the time, but, you know, we're not microwaving tennis. It's not instant popcorn. You know, it's not a Disney picture where 90 minutes later, you know, okay, let's play. I mean, all the thoughts of, you know, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? You know, practice, practice, practice. But tennis is a difficult sport, so I think that it's an injustice that these young kids that are really young are in a tennis program where they come out day after day, and really what they should be doing is playing a multiple number of sports. But while they're playing a multiple number of sports, and all you got to do is study Roger Federer and how he was taught when he was 7, 8 years old, is they need to be taught stroke reduction. You know, there's always the case of you know, say a Bjorn Borg or a Monica Seles, you know, players who were not, you know, they became champions, but they, you know, how they were taught technically. You know, it's like Kudla, who's a great American player. You know, you read about Kudla, and they couldn't pull him off the backboard when he was a kid. And actually, kids who hit against the backboard have a tendency to have the racket go out towards the wall and not towards the side fence. Because the backboard will tell them, okay, you know, you swing this way, the ball will come back to you.
Right. Let me take a quick, I got a couple of callers on here I'd like to bring on in a minute. Let me take my last commercial break, and we'll be right back with Coach Steve Smith.
Africa, to St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks to Catherine Dunham for giving my pops his glory. He came down with his drum and a dream to change the world in a free, uplifting world. And that's all he ever won. Mom came a little after, gave birth to my brother. Then all of the pressure made them fight one another. See, the pain will never last. Did the best with what they had. He knew the world was out for grabs. any place to find it.
I can't think of a better place to go than courtmakers.com for any of my court equipment needs. Any kind of equipment that you need for your club or facility. Windscreens, nets, net straps, benches, scoreboards. You can find all of this at courtmakers.com. Or like them on Facebook and see all the latest stuff that they're doing in court construction, resurfacing, and lighting. That's courtmakers.com, courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. All of you know that I take pride in calling it the way it is. And boy, oh boy, is it an exciting time in tennis. The 10 and under stuff, the juniors, the pros, and college. If you want to hear the cutting edge of the real stuff and not just the diluted and watered down fluff, folks, listen to Coach J.P. Weber on the We Coach Tennis program every Tuesday at noon Eastern Standard Time here on the Yellow Ball Network.
Mama pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Or what the mama saw, it was against the law. The mama looked down and spit on the ground every time my name gets mentioned.
Hi, we're on the Recoach Tennis Radio Show. We're on this week with Steve Smith. If you want to call in, the number to call in is 646-652-4856. And Coach, let me ask you, why I don't see a lot of coaches that are successful at producing players, and I mean, you know, being able to repeat it time and time again. I don't see those guys using a lot of the 10 and under stuff for an extended period of time. And you touched on it a little bit. It seemed to rankle people's, you know, if you've listened to my show any at all, you know it. It irritates people. They feel like they don't have freedom in this system. So you got the Great Base Initiative. If people got to follow that, is it going to make them feel like they even have less freedom? I mean, isn't there something, you know, I mean, you're getting this, you know, you're talking about educating and teaching and all this stuff. People got to feel free to be able to do that the way they want to do it, don't they?
Well, I think with Great Base, idealistically, if a player is between, you know, say age 5 and age 9, and, you know, the parents need to be proactive. You know, here are the basic routines: shadow swing in front of the mirror, hit the ball off the cones, swing a sock like the old baseball drill where you put a baseball in the sock. And if players are to do that, a theme from a book, 10 minutes, 10 months, 10 years. But I think what happens is that most of us, we have someone come to us and they're 14, 15 years old. They've already been playing 5 years and they have to be untaught.
You know,
are you still there? Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. A lot of times if I lose a kid to somebody else or somebody's, you know, if a kid goes somewhere, a lot of times I know that when I send them or if they've gone to somebody else, there's not a lot they have to relearn. You can add a lot to, and that is true about the Great Base. I mean, somebody could take whatever a kid has that comes out of your Great Base, you know, if it's one of your kids that comes out of your program, they're not going to have a lot that they have to unlearn. They're not going to have a lot of kinks in the swing or the, this or that, the other thing. And that is probably one of the best benefits to it.
Well, I think that, you know, the strength of the individual, there will always be individuality. But one thing about the Great Base or systematic tennis teaching, that you won't have a player like a Monica Seles if she was taught the way I've been taught to teach tennis. So I think, you know, one should really be their own best critic. You know, there's not one way. There's not a right or wrong. But, again, style that's overemphasized in tennis. You know, no two tennis players play exactly the same. It's like if you teach the alphabet, people do different things with the English language. You know, someone's going to write the great American novel, and, you know, someone's going to struggle to write a note to themselves. But same thing with the numerical system. You know, I just think we need to get the horse in front of the cart. And, you know, too many people leave tennis. And, you know, I always tease, and it's not really funny, the thought where comedy is tragedy with time is, you know, the number one sport in America is to go to the mall. There's too many children that leave tennis. It's like with Vic Braden. In one of his books, he used to say, and he was an educator, that if you put kids in reading groups and you got the robins, the blue jays, and the sparrows are the slow readers, the slow readers know they're the slow readers. You know, I try to get people's attention by using a line where crummy plays crummier. You know, who wins? Is crummy wins. But when it comes down to, I don't think that it's freelance. I don't think it's a matter of, you know, you just, you know, Tim Galloway, a lot of great things from his book, but you don't just pick a racket up and naturally play. Like I said, the backboard's a teacher, a clay court's a teacher.
It's funny you mentioned that, the Tim Galloway thing. You know, I told you I had an interview that I did recently with Chet Murphy, and hopefully I'll get that on. But he was actually very critical of Galloway's. He actually wrote a book, I think it was called Thinking Tennis, in response to Galloway's book that he just let go. He didn't like the let it go so much part. He really wanted to see that. You know, somebody, you know, put their mind to it a little bit.
Well, Chet Murphy, Bill Murphy, I spent a lot of time with Chet. For a long time, he was out in Tucson, Arizona. But, you know, I think the brain drain, I think that, you know, this last year, Vic Braden, Wellie Van Horn passed away. Dennis Vandermeer has not had very good health for a number of years now. You know, but where's the new leadership in tennis? You know, I think too many people are actually teaching the game, and they're not really students of the game.
All right, are you producing your own stuff? So the Great Base Initiative, do you have blinders on? You produce your own stuff, and that's it. And do you see anybody when you say that? Are they out there? Are you one of them? Are they out there? Do you know of anybody that you would say, hey, go listen to this guy, or JP, you got to interview this guy. Who's out there that's...
Well, in this country, I certainly would, and I'm a member of the USPTA and PTR, and in years past, I was a tester for both organizations. I would encourage young aspiring tennis teachers to be proactive and be members of both those organizations, because you need to be mentored. You need to be around people who've been in the game for a long time. I don't think that... you can just wing it. I don't think you can, you know, just Google how to teach the forehand.
You know, Steve, I get more out of talking to you. If I get you online, or I'll get another coach online on the phone or something, and we'll talk, or I'll go to a tournament and I'll sit and talk to a coach, I get more out of that. I mean, it's funny, and I suppose I'm probably going to get a lot of grief for this, but I don't get anything out of going to these conferences where they've got the same canned speeches from the same guys. And most of the time, the guys that can make themselves free to go to every conference and talk every time, I don't find them to have the kind of substance worth listening to. Am I too critical there?
Well, you know, I spent so many years going to conferences. I think that you can leave with a golden nugget or two, but there's no treasure chest. I think you're much better off to go spend 3 or 4 days with a veteran coach than you are to
get an
airplane and listen to some for 45 minutes.
If you could get with somebody that'll mentor you, if you can get with, you know, not enough people take, everybody wants to be an expert sooner than later. I still don't even want to call myself an expert on anything, because the guys that call themselves, there's some young guys out there that call themselves experts. They don't listen anymore. They shut off anything from the outside. They know. And a lot of them that are given the high performance, you get the guys that are given high performance credentials from the USTA, you can't tell them a thing. They already know it's all, they know it all. And yet there's intricacies, and there's little tiny nuances to things that you can get when you spend time with somebody who's done it for many, 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 many years. Does that make sense?
Well, I think you have to go back to the well. In other words, years ago, the USTA was the United States Tennis Academy run by Dick Braden. And at that time, the USTA was the USLTA. And the USLTA asked Dick to drop his acronym so they could become the USTA. So, you know, 5 days with Dick Braden, you know, what a treat. But, you know, you have to go back to the well. You know, certification is not education. I spent years with Dennis Vandermeer, and Dennis had his Tune Tennis University, and he would come out to Tyler, Texas, where at Tyler Junior College we had a 2-year curriculum for tennis teachers. And 2 years was a fair amount of time, but you know, you can't really train someone, you know, with the USPTA PTR, you know, if you can take the test in 2 days and pay $200, that's not enough. And obviously the piece of paper, the certification, it's great that people have taken that step and have that professional pride. They've gone the distance to at least do that. But and I understand both organizations. I'm not proactive at this point, that they're trying to make strides in continuing education. And, you know, that's what happens, like, say, in the medical profession. You have to consistently surround yourself.
It's baloney. I mean, you've got Dr. Knodel, and you've got some other people that have been, you know, desiring to come on and talk about it, maybe from a different point of view. There's only one. It's industry driven. You know, you go to these things. You know, there's no differing point of view on, say, for example, 10 and under stuff. There's no differing. What you go and take at one conference, the same guy shows up at the next conference 2 months later. They've got a guy now that, you know, he's on the internet. He's got a mic coming around down in his profile picture. It shows him with a mic in front of his face. And that's all he does, is goes around and talks. But these guys aren't the guys that are actually producing players. I think I could get more out of going and spending a week hanging out with Jerry Baskin or Jack Sharp. I mean, Jack Sharp, you know, continues to, and I think, isn't there something to, okay, let me ask you this. Isn't there something to that where a coach can repeatedly produce players year after year after year? So there's something replicable about his system that you need to go sit down and maybe see what he does, as opposed to somebody that's got a great shtick, or, so, you know, they come out and they've got a great speech that they can give. And they can tell a few canned jokes and things of that nature, and you can get a credit for that. I would much rather see a mentorship type of program.
Well, I think the conference coach, many times a presenter, and they have so much to offer. I spent years with Jim Lehrer, and he did and has done so much for tennis. But it's not a consultation period. Many times he was coaching players that maybe they've already scored, or they're on third base and they're about to score. And I think coming back to the great base, we need to do a better job with people who are just getting up to bat for the first time. You know, when it comes down to developing players, you know, I've had a great deal of success developing players. Carl Hale up in Toronto, who I know well, says the tough thing about tennis is it's so difficult to hit home run, because the coaches who get attention are the ones that are tied in with marquee players. And, you know, we all know that right now is probably the worst time in tennis because of the celebrity coaches. Now, granted, they can be great confidants, they can be great mentors, but, I mean, is Boris Becker teaching Djokovic how to play? Obviously not. I mean, he was, just like Becker was a great, great player before Kiryak came into his life. So there's definitely a lot to be said for what they do. But at the same time, so we have the celebrity coaches at the very top. Then we have, like, say, an ex-college player who maybe they didn't finish their degree. They went out to try to play the future circuit, and they really couldn't get through the qualifiers. And you know, then the consumer, they want to take the shortcut, and they're going to make the mistake of hiring the young kid who can hit the ball really well. And that scenario just repeats itself over and over again. So we have these glorified sparring partners. And I always tease people, it's unlike boxing. You know, a sparring partner in boxing, they wear a helmet and a mouth guard, and they don't say anything. You know, you get a 23-year-old sparring partner, and the parents think they're finding a shortcut, and they're paying a lot of money per hour. That glorified sparring partner is compelled to say something, and they really have nothing to say, and they're winging it. You know, they're 23 years old, and, you know, many of them learned tennis so many years ago through osmosis. Without being retrained, they come out of college tennis having done a lot of cross courts and down the lines and playing tiebreakers, that when they start to coach, you know, there's just not a lot of fundamentals being taught.
Not a lot. Let me bring a caller on. Caller 770, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, we're on the line. We're on the air with Coach Steve. Who do we have calling in? We've got.
This is Will C. Graves.
Hey, Will, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Steve, Will's at TPC Sugarloaf in the Atlanta area. And Will, you've got one boy that you've told me in the past. He's a great base initiative kid, isn't he?
Well, I like to consider that he's probably under that umbrella. Steve, I taught at Brookhaven under Dave Anderson and Dion for about 4 years in the real early 2000s, and then I moved back to Atlanta, and then pretty much everything I've tried to do with his game stemmed from the things that I learned while I was there. So I'm not sure he's a perfect replication of what Dave or you might like, but I've tried to make him as close as I can. So in that regard, that's why I would consider him to some extent a great base kid, yeah.
Well, great. Well, there is no perfection. How old is your son?
He is 14.
Okay.
So when we left there, he was about 1 year old, and so we had just started, you know, getting him a little rack and rolling balls to him and just kind of goofing around, but yeah.
Well, that's great, Dave Anderson and his crew. Go ahead.
Tell Steve a little bit about you. You have an interesting situation. You have the 14-year-old, but you also have a 9-year-old, right? And you've got a different. And you came up, and he sort of came up right in the middle of this initiative by the USTA. And tell him how it's created a different challenge for you.
Well, my 14-year-old. My 14-year-old Gavin was really just. All the changes happened right on his heels. So when he was 8 and a half, he was playing, an 8 and under tournament, co-ed tournaments, and really enjoying that. It was full court, yellow ball, and he, you know, I felt like we had pretty good foundation going, and then boom, they took that away at the beginning of 2009, and then he was forced to start playing the 10 and unders, which I really wanted him to do the 8s for a while, but then he played 10s. And then towards the end of the 10s, they took away the yellow ball in the 10s. And he was just ahead of that. And so, so he progressed along pretty nicely, and he's a decent player. But we never used any of the ROG in terms of tournament play, although I like to use that for certain. I like to use the different balls for certain teaching situations, like somebody's trying to learn a continental volley grip, or a continental grip on the volley, and sometimes the lighter ball maybe helps me get them comfortable with that. But in terms of a tournament match player, I don't really care for it myself, even though the USTA seems to get mad at me from that. But for my 9-year-old, you know, I'm trying to develop him as similar to how I did with Gavin, because it went pretty well. And so now I'm not sure to, do I just keep him out of tournaments and until he gets a little older and just keep focusing on the fundamentals like I am, or do I just, I mean, we're always going to focus on the fundamentals. But does the weight of the ball and the length of the court impact his development? I thought my first son, Gavin, got a lot out of being able to learn how to adjust to a high bouncing yellow ball by taking it on the rise, or learning how to back up for some of them, and, and deal with the weight and the length and the and those kind of elements. So I don't know what I don't really want to do anything different than I did with my first kid, but now I don't really have the option of having him play any tournaments in the yellow ball, or very limited options unless I drive over to Marietta for JP, of course. So I don't know. I don't have it figured out.
One thing, Dave, going back to Dave Anderson and his crew, they do a great job. In fact, I was emailing David this morning at 6 a.m. We spent a lot of years together. With, you know, I think every situation, every child is different. And I think that the yellow ball, so we'll start with the red ball, the orange ball, the green dot ball, I think they're all great training tools. I think one positive is at one time the USTA dropped 12 and under tennis. There was no rankings for the 12s. And
yeah.
I remember Doug McCurdy saying, well, kids want to compete. And I think if we went back to when kids in the United States, back in the day it wasn't fair for women, but when boys would play, and now girls could do the same, is playing three different sports. The youngsters, I mean, a young kid from Central or Northern Europe, for example, they're going to learn to ski, skate, play soccer. You know, all over the world, soccer is just an instant breakout sport. You just need one ball, and sometimes they don't even play with the ball. They'll roll up a pair of socks and play in the hallway. So we have to do a better job of playing athletes or training, developing athletes. I think, you know, and again, I'm all for the USTA, but I think the CEO should have an advisor when they hire their new general manager. When it comes down to the young kid tennis, the USTA is not going to go backwards and change that program. But I think one thing to adapt to it is, you know, kids can compete playing other sports, become athletic, and there is no rush. I mean, people are going nowhere fast. People are going in circles. And then there's no accountability. Like, where do all the kids go? You know, why do we lose other kids to other sports? And, you know, where do they go? I think that if one of the reasons that so many kids don't play other sports is, you know, just pure capitalism. You know, let's get them in the program. Let's make money. And, I mean, coaches need to be more creative. I think, you know, I've been in Russia many times. It's not uncommon to be in a Russian tennis club, and one of the tennis courts is set up completely as a gymnastic gym. And kids are taught to tumble and you know, become courageous with athletic movements. And they have fun, bouncing up and down on a trampoline. But, you know, I always tease and say, if you have 64 10-year-olds, who wins the tournament? You know, one 10-year-old. And, you know, and you start counting overheads. In that project we do with 12 and unders, we charted 1,000 overheads. 7 overheads were attempted. So tennis is in a crisis. Yeah. You know, I think when it comes down to the quick start, the little kid 10 and under tennis, if there was a rule put in place, okay, they play doubles and the ball can only bounce once. And if they're playing with a red ball, but everybody had to go to the net, then they would be developing instincts and reflexes to be going forward. But I don't think a lot of the times when you put committees together that, you know, everybody is well-intended, but I don't think a lot of times the people that have been in the trenches, just like a minute ago we were talking about conference pros, you know, you need to get pros from the trenches to help make some of the decisions for player development.
I hear you. You know, yeah. You know that no accountability part, you know, that I don't think they actually came out and said that they knew that they were going to lose a generation of them or two. The prediction was that they were going to have here in Atlanta. I don't know if Will was part of that. I was down there for that meeting. Gordon Smith came out and said, you know, we've got 11,000 kids 10 and under playing tournaments in the U.S. By the time 10 and under is done, we're going to have 100,000. I don't think it works that way with the kids.
No, it doesn't. Well, you know what I thought was really interesting about that, JP, was that I feel like, you know, and I listened to what Steve was saying about, you know, you kind of have to do a little bit of both. I think they thought that because everybody was going to have so much fun playing with the new equipment and the new court sizes that the sport was really going to grow, and I think they really believe that because the balls bounced lower and the ball would stay more in the kid's strike zone and the court was more right sized, that in and of itself was going to improve technique. They didn't feel like the kids in America had all this great technique, and I argued with all those guys, and I said good technique is going to come from the good coaches. It's not going to come from the court size. You have to have people that have some understanding of what Steve does or what Dave Anderson does and people like that. And so they just fought me on that, and I told them, I said, I don't think your plan is gonna work that way. Kids aren't gonna have any better technique one way or the other. It's whether they have access to good coaching.
Well, let me ask both of you this question. I mean, and you said they thought about Steve. I don't think they thought about it. I think this was done. This is something that was pushed by mostly by the industry. I think when they had that play and stay committee meeting over there, I've heard that it was a cocktail party. They sat out there at the cocktail party and put it together. The industry guys showed them what could work, and it was done on the fly. Was there? I don't think that there was a lot of thought into this, as far as
years ago we had the rally ball, and the rally ball was 7% bigger. It was slow, and it was a great training tool. But young players want to do what the very best players do in the world. I always say that you get inspired by watching a great musician, but if you're going to learn how to play the saxophone, you've got to go to a great instructor. So I think more thought could be put into it. But I think I know years ago I was in Ireland and I was working with their coaches, and I was there a couple of years later. Previously I was married. I married a gal from Ireland, and I was in Ireland, and my boys were playing in an Irish tournament, and the gals from Ireland, Kleister and Hennin, it was like, okay, they played with light balls, they played mini tennis, and this is what the world has to do. And the Europeans were ahead of us as far as developing different type tennis balls. So I can remember being in Ireland at the national tournament, and they had hired someone from Belgium, like what we're doing in the United States right now. If someone's from Spain, they're a great coach, and we've just totally bought into the Spanish method. But the tennis around the world, the 10 and under initiative, to me, it came from the success that they had in Belgium. And then it was like, this is everybody jumped on the bandwagon and said, this is the way we have to go.
Well, let me ask you. I'm gonna have to run here real quick. Okay, if Will or anybody else has a young kid and they want, you offer a service where, tell us about that. They can video the kid and then you'll comment on the video. How does that work?
Now, we do have the Great Base Backboard, which is a copy, a spinoff of the Tennis Mate that was made in the 80s and is no longer made. There's five or six versions around the world of the portable backboard. People can send us a video and we'll critique it. But we have online courses that are free. We put up a 25-hour course called Tennis Intelligence Applied. I've traveled around for years and done weekend workshops, and that's why we put a 25-hour course together. And we just found out that people are very busy. So then we said, okay, we'll put together a one-hour course. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, we called it The Great Base, an idea from Richard Hernandez. And, now we have a 45-minute course on how to practice at home. And, young players know the fundamentals.
Where do they go to find that?
Yeah, just go to tennissmith.com. This tennissmithputtogether.com.
And if they want to send a video of their kid, what do they do there?
They can just send it, just inquire through info@tennissmith.com.
Okay, and you'll give them directions as to what to put together. If they want to buy a backboard, where do they get the backboard?
Same thing. They just inquire at info@tennissmith.com.
How much does it cost? How much is the backboard?
The backboards are $350, give or take a few dollars. Andrew Garcia runs that, and I think it's $350.
Okay. All right, I've got to run today. Thank you for being on, Coach Smith. It's been great having you. I like having you on. I still, you know, offer's still open. You can have your own channel here on the Yellow Ball Network. Love to have you as a host here on a weekly basis. Let me know if you ever want to do that.
Well, JP, thanks. Will, great to talk to you as well. All the best, guys.
Okay. Bye, guys.
This has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Check in here with us every Tuesday at noon and listen to another great coach talk about what makes their program a success.